Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, with book titles like Fight Like a Girl, Kiss the Girls and Made Them Cry, The True Measure of a Woman, it's not hard to figure out that Lisa Bevere has a passion to bring messages to the female half of the population. I think the rest of us guys can actually learn a few things or two by reading her books. She's a writer, she's a speaker, she's a mum, she's the wife of well-known author John Bevere. She leads a busy life travelling the world, but she hasn't got there without a fight. And she's in Australia this week for the Colour Your World conference, and she joins us now. Welcome to Open House, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be with you.
You know, your childhood and your teenage years weren't without their traumas, and just want to start there. Tell us a little bit about those early days of growing up. Tell us how they've shaped who you are today.
Well, I lost an eye to cancer when I was 5 years old, and they gave my mom about 6 months for me to live. They're like, 6 months, if she makes it and she gets through the other side, then, you know, she's going to be all right. But she could just go to sleep one night, have a headache, and never wake up again. And so my poor mother was just really distraught over that, put her into a depression for much of, you know, that time period. And then I, you know, surprised the doctors, and I lived. But growing up with one eye, you know, one of them being plastic, feeling very awkward, very out of place. Like, everybody was looking at me like, look at her, she's just got one eye. Mm. And then, you know, looking for femininity, I couldn't really find that. So I was very much a tomboy. And I have a theory, Sheraton, that when a young girl cannot connect with strength or beauty in her femininity, then she often will go right from being a tomboy to sexuality, which is what I did. Mm. I was like, if I cannot, you know, I'm not going to be one of the boys anymore because I'm obviously developing, but I'm still going to be in their world by behaving in a way that will connect me with them. Mm. And I think a lot of young girls find that they kind of can't connect with the Barbie group, and they don't want to just be froofy little girls, and they just don't know how to find their place.
Yeah, so I remember there's a well-known evangelist and speaker here in Australia named John Smith, and I think years ago he had a great statement. He said, guys often give love to get sex, girls often give sex to get love. Do you think that's probably where you're heading down?
You know, I think I would love to say I was that noble. I think I gave sex to get control, and that's awful, but that was really for me. It was more about, nobody is going to hurt me, nobody is going to control me, I'm going to use this for power.
Mm. Tell me a little bit more about that then. So you're feeling like everybody's looking at you in the schoolyard, then you say, wow, okay, maybe I've got a certain degree of control, a certain degree of power because of your developing femininity. Where did that lead, and what were the results of that kind of lifestyle that you started to pick up?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it was one of those things where all of a sudden I felt very awkward and very uncomfortable and very unattractive. And then one year, all of a sudden, I had attention. All of a sudden, I was attractive. All of a sudden, I wasn't quite, you know, this ugly duckling anymore, and I didn't know how to handle it. And what happened was it led to a whole lot of promiscuity. And for me, I thought, you know, but I'm responsible. I use birth control. I only have sex with people that I love, which might mean 8 guys, but, you know, I've loved them before I had sex with them. I'm a moral good person. And, you know, I never imagined what those choices would, you know, kind of navigate for me later in my life. I never imagined when I was 19 years of age trying out for the sexual gymnastics team at my college, what it might feel like when I would be a mother and have my own children look at me and say, now, Mom, you were a virgin when you married Dad, right? And I was just like, oh, my gosh, my whole world has come crashing down right now in this moment, because I didn't want my children to make the same choices that I had made, but I didn't know how to position them well. Mm. And for me, I think a lot of mothers make this mistake. They say, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I didn't live my life well and perfectly. And I want to kind of clarify those two words. I don't know that anybody lives their life perfectly, but I think we can live our lives well. And part of living our lives well is redeeming our bad choices. And being honest with our children and saying, man, I wish that I had been more careful and cautious and mindful of my future with my choices, but I want something so much more for you. And we need to step beyond it being about us anymore and start understanding that there's a generation of sons and daughters who really want to walk in something more. And you know, it is so amazing, Sheraton. My oldest son got married last fall, And, you know, by God's grace, I mean, they totally made it through. I mean, it was down to the wire. You know? And matter of fact, it must have been hard for them because she's already pregnant. She is going to be a grandmother this October. But, you know, I mean, they ran that race well and without regret. And they so treasure what they have. And they are just almost nauseatingly in love. And so many young people, they just don't have that.
Yes.
They don't have that treasure. They don't have that legacy. And their parents don't help them navigate their sexuality. They think, oh, you know, that's too embarrassing. Well, we need to be the ones that help our children navigate those things. And really, Christians should be the ones that really are the strongest in this area, because according to the polls, at least in the United States, Christians are the ones that have more of a history, especially married people, of enjoying sex on a long-term basis than people that are even, you know, running around being promiscuous.
This is Open House right across the nation. We're talking to Elisa Bevere, author of a number of books. She's got a bit of a passion, really, to speak to women, but you can absolutely guess that the other half of the population are getting a lot out of our conversation right now. So, Lisa, you talked about then the redeeming of that life that you started to wander into in your teenage years. Tell me about that redemption. Obviously, you've now everybody knows you as a Christian speaker. Tell me about your journey to faith.
Well, you know, I had these. I think that once we become a Christian, you know, that's really just the beginning. One of my favorite scriptures is that the time that we're born again is the beginning. It's the beginning of that path to a light that ever increases. Whereas most Christians kind of say, oh, that day when I got born again, that was like the whole highlight of my life. Well, that wasn't the highlight for me. That was a turning point for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in my life was I found that God has systematically positioned me to face different areas in my life that I feared. And I had an opportunity to speak to a gathering of young girls, and I went into this speaking time with an attitude of, you know what, I'm glad I'm talking to these girls because these girls are out of line. They're dressing immodestly. They're behaving inappropriately. You know, they're sexually promiscuous, and they should know better, do better, be better, and I'm going to just tell them the way it is. And you know what, Sheraton, I left broken, and I found out these young girls had no safe place. They were bombarded on every front, and not even their homes were safe places for them to feel like they could escape the constant bombardment of the diminishing of their value as women, the diminishing of their beauty to seduction. And I just remember driving home and thinking, they have no safe place.
Mm.
And the Holy Spirit beginning to talk to me and saying, I want you to begin to pen a love story for these young girls, to write a bedtime story, to put back to sleep what was awakened in a wrong manner.
Mm.
Because they are trapped in a nightmare, and I want to give them a dream. And often the church's response to this sexual nightmare is to hand out a list of rules. But you know what? When my children woke during the night when they were young and they had a nightmare, I didn't give them rules.
Mm.
I didn't say, now here's rule number one, you don't wake up mom. Rule number two, you know, there are no monsters. I got in bed with them. I sang them songs. I told them stories. Why? Because I wanted to put back to sleep what had been awakened in a wrong manner. And we have a whole generation, and I would love to say it's just women, but it's also young men whose sexuality has been awakened in a very abrupt and frightening way.
Yes.
And we need to allow that to be put back to sleep so it can be reawakened in a way that is meaningful.
Lisa, I so resonate with what you're saying there. I think in so many ways, what we need in this generation is a fresh vision of what God-given sexuality is all about. And it needs to be a compelling vision, a compelling picture that actually draws us towards it, and then by its very nature shows up the counterfeit for what it is, which is what we get all the time bombarded to us through TV programs and magazine articles and adverts and things like that, that basically you find somebody, you sleep with them, you work out whether you might get married to them, and if not, you move on. We need this kind of fresh vision that inspires us. And I think the Song of Solomon, the book in the Bible, can be one point of giving us that vision. I mean, there's a wonderful portrayal of God honoring, flourishing, fully enjoyable sexuality. But we need more of those kinds of visions of sexuality, I think, you know, put up there for the world to see and for the world to be inspired by.
I totally agree. And, you know, I tend to traumatize my audiences as I travel and speak. When I put up my husband and I say, okay, we've been married for 27 years.
Great.
And then I say, and I love him more, and they're fine with that. And I think he's better looking now, and they're like, okay, that's fine. And then I say, and I enjoy sex with him more now. And all the young girls are like, oh, my gosh.
They gasp. Yeah.
They're having sex. They're almost 50, and they're having sex. That's terrifying. But you know what? It shouldn't be. Yeah. Because if we can put the image that we're building a sexual legacy and we're building a heritage of intimacy, then we are putting a hope and a future in front of them where they don't feel like they have to hurry up and grab everything while they're young and spend it foolishly and, you know, perhaps catch some venereal disease that may threaten their whole life and their ability to even have children. You know, and so we need to be able to say, look, you can build a future. And, you know, the truth is I don't look as good as I did when I was 22. I was 22 when I got married, and I'm, you know, don't have that same body, but my husband doesn't know that. He sees me, and he looks at me, and there is such a sexual history and lineage of intimacy and love and history with this woman that he couldn't even be drawn by somebody else. And we need to teach our daughters how to build that.
Yes.
We need to teach our sons how to build that. The Bible says the older women must teach and train the younger women, not how to just endure marriage and, you know, be good little housewives, but how to love. How to love, how to build love. And I think we've lost that art.
I think we have. This is Open House right across the nation. Lisa Bevere is with us. Sex, intimacy, femininity. We're all talking about those kinds of topics. She's speaking at the Hillsong Colour Your World Conference in just a week's time. Now, just on that point, Lisa, how can women do that? Because I think for a good deal of mothers, this is a bit of a tricky topic. You know, this is a bit of an embarrassing topic. How do I raise this with my daughter? Start talking about these things, not just simply contraception or not just simply, yes, wait until you're married, but actually start to impart some of this glorious vision of what God-given sexuality can actually become. How do you encourage older women to do that?
Well, I think that we need to model it as though it's not something hidden and wrong and secret and closeted. And I think we need to be affectionate in front of our, you know, our children with our husbands, and we need to be complimentary of our husbands. I'm not saying to be sexual. I'm saying affectionate. And I think we need to openly discuss sexual things, especially in this world. There's really no lack of opportunity to bring it up. I mean, there's things on TV. There's, you know, song lyrics where you can immediately seize that moment and say, you know what? That is not representing that correctly. Because it's actually the most amazing when you have two people that build history and, you know, begin to bring the things up. And it's sure, kids at first, they don't even want to know that you're having sex. They're like, oh, please, we don't even want to know our parents are having sex. On one level, they don't. But on another level, they'd be very troubled if they thought you weren't and if they thought you didn't love each other and desire each other. And so we try to navigate it with it. I kind of used the illustration in the Kiss the Girls and Made Them Cry book of the whole Sleeping Beauty dynamic, that the parents made the spinning wheel illegal. They, you know, they burnt them, they hid them, you know, they never trained their daughter to be skillful with the spinning wheel. And so what happened was the first time she saw one, she reached out and she pricked her finger on it. And so what we need to do is train our young people to be skillful with their sexuality from the very beginning. We don't have to introduce everything at once. And I think that was the hard thing for me. My parents just kind of threw a book at me, and I said, oh my gosh, what is all this?
Yeah.
Don't crash course it. Make it as natural as introducing anything else. You know, talking about it, it's different feelings, different thoughts, different struggles. You know, when my son was away on his honeymoon, I remember I just sent him one text message, and I said, I just want you to know, this will be the worst sex you will have in your life.
I wonder how many mothers actually send text messages to their sons like that.
Well, I mean, and I was like, and there's no need for you to reply.
Yeah. And I won't, Mom, I won't.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I wanted them to understand they were beginning something. You know, because everything thinks that's the buildup, and that's not. That's the beginning. That's the starting. You know, we just try to leave it really open with our kids and not make it embarrassing for them to talk about it.
And maybe there's a role for the sense of fun in there as well. I mean, even just you doing that on their honeymoon, that's certainly a great way to give a little bit of advice that they would have needed, I'm sure.
Right.
Maybe we just need to lighten up about it. It's a serious topic. I'm not saying cheapen it. Let's keep it very, very high value. But maybe we can have a little bit of fun with this.
Well, I mean, I wish that some other people had helped me on some of the areas. You know, I wish that we didn't have to take as long to build, you know, certain areas into our life.
Mm.
But the truth is, I think it is really light to say this is the worst you're going to have.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, it wasn't performance based on anybody.
Yeah.
It actually relieves all the performance.
Yep,
and
that's
he
true.
Probably showed it to his wife, and they probably both laughed.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it just, you know, we just need to be those voices that are safe to come to.
Yeah, Lisa, this raises another issue, which is the whole issue of femininity and what a female is. I'm going to spend a whole night talking about what a male is. But we've got now a whole bunch of feminist voices that are saying what has gone wrong with the feminist movement. You know, it was there to kind of liberate women and so that they didn't need a man. And now we've got the whole raunch culture, which is kind of taking women all back to that, and women are flocking to it. Unfortunately, we're seeing that everywhere. Femininity. Now, when you became a Christian, when you got into the church, you found that, you know, you swung between two poles. On the church side, there was kind of the female sit in the corner and stay quiet kind of approach to femininity. And then, of course, on the radical feminism end, you've got the kind of, well, you've almost got to be a man to compete in the world. Tell me where and how you lead women these days to understand this whole idea of femininity, who they are, because that is actually foundational to everything we've just been talking about.
You know, it is. And I think for me, the big turning point was really a God moment. I understand, you know, kind of almost the idea of let's keep the women quiet, because when I came into the church, I just found a lot of the church women to be way eviler than the women in the world. I mean, I was like, okay, you know what, I'm understanding why you're telling them just play the organ and not talk. But the truth is, they just didn't find purpose. And women are made to multiply things. And if you have somebody who is God created as a multiplier, I mean, it is our very chromosome structure. We are XX. We are the multiplication X factor. If you do not allow us to multiply, then we divide because we're broken. And any time you multiply something by something that is fractioned, you get a broken response. And so we've had a lot of division among the women. And when God really dropped it into my heart that he'd asked me to minister women, I said, you've got to be kidding. Anybody but women. I don't like women. God, you know, I'm really not one of them. I, like, have a woman's body, but I think like a man. So I'm really not a woman.
You were the tomboy, weren't you?
Oh, I was. And I, you know, I'm still kind of a tomboy. But see, that's the great thing is we can be a woman in our own package. And we can be feminine without being frilly.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what does that look like, though? What is femininity without looking frilly?
Oh, you know what? That's the awesome thing is we're writing that right now. We have to be authentic to who we are. I mean, my husband thinks I'm incredibly feminine because he's riding a 1,500cc motorcycle and I'm next to him on my Ninja. I mean, he understands that I'm going to be quick and quiet and he is going to be loud and big. And he likes that, too. I mean, he likes me better next to him than he likes me behind him on the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we need to understand that God has this thing where he's saying, I want the women to be among and with the men. I don't want them behind the men. I don't want them in front of the men. I want them alongside the men. And so what we got to do is change the women's attitude to understand that their creation was God-valued, that the reason why God created woman was as an answer to the very first problem. And the very first problem posed in the garden before the fall was it wasn't good for the man to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And if women get it, that they are an answer to a problem, and that the man is not their answer, and the man is not their problem, and other women are not their problem, then they begin to behave like an answer. And so I really find that just that declares a whole lot of value because it gives them paradigm shift. When I say to women, you are an answer looking for problems to solve. When you arrive, you bring solution. So yes, it's a problem when you try to act like a man when you're a woman. Yes, it's a problem when you try to have the man's voice when the earth needs the woman's voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem when you don't understand the strength of what a woman carries and you think there's only strength in with what a man has. There's a whole lot of issues in this church right now as a whole when we look over the earth that could have been helped. I'm going to enlarge that a little bit. It's not just the church, in the government,
mm-hmm.
in the science world, in the marketplaces. If we had involved the intuition of women, that kind of intuitive feel, this other stuff that wouldn't have happened.
Mm, the collaborative, because, the kind of approach to collaborating over problems, I think that's another big one too that women often can bring.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's strengths that my husband brings to the table, and then there's strengths that I bring to the table. And in the last 27 years, we have learned to trust each other's strengths and to respect those, and that usually merging those two strengths brings the correct solution.
Mm. Great to talk to you, Lisa, and I'm sure that folks are going to enjoy what you have to say in a week's time. Good to talk to you on Open House tonight.
Thank you, Sheraton. Yeah.
So Lisa Bevere, author, speaker, wife, mum. She's in Australia this week for Hillsong's Colour Your World conference. It's in Sydney. It's running twice, kind of 3 days there, starting this Thursday and then repeated the following Monday.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.